name is Paola Testa. I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another project by Anthony Gormley in Trafalgar Square. The date is the 20th of August 2009 and the time is 3:15 a.m. Please could you tell me your name, your age and where you're from?
Michael Walter is my name. I'm 60 and today I've come from Exton.
How are you feeling about going up on the plinth?
Okay.
And how is it that you first heard about the project?
I came and saw it. And then I knew somebody that worked it with Anthony Gormley, who said, why don't you give it a go? So I did.
And what is it that appeals to you about the project and made you want to give it a go?
I'm not sure very much appeals to me about it, really, to be honest. I think the reason I gave it a go was it just seemed like an extraordinary opportunity to play a saxophone in the middle of Trafalgar Square. And hopefully, and I've hit the jackpot, really, I was hoping to do it at a funny time of day, like early in the morning or something. So that's really why I did it.
And are you happy with the time you've been?
Yeah, I am, actually, yeah. Yeah, 4 o'clock in the morning seems about the right time, largely because it will be fairly quiet and it will be very loud.
Would you prefer to not have a lot of people in the square, or is it
I don't mind about the number of people.
And what is it that you'll be playing?
I don't know.
And why did you choose to play the saxophone?
Because that's all I can play.
Are you a professional saxophonist?
No, I'm not. No, I play a lot though, but I'm not a professional.
How long have you been playing?
Well, most of my life, on and off.
And do you perform often?
Yep. And tonight, I'm performing tonight, so I won't be going to bed because I've got to go back and play this evening.
Where are you playing?
At the Foundry in Shoreditch. The Wellcome Trust aren't going to be very interested in that, are they, really?
Well, tell us a little bit more about the kinds of things you perform at, or what it is that you do when you perform.
Well, I play improvised music. And free jazz, and that's for all the people at the Wellcome Trust who know the difference. And this is big arguments about the difference between improvised music and free jazz, but and I've played it ever since I was 20, I suppose, in one form or another, and I've played it in fairly odd places. This may be almost the oddest, maybe not. I have played it in the street in Moscow once, and I play in all sorts of clubs all over the country, really.
And what is it that you do for a living?
I'm a designer, working in architecture, basically.
And how did you get into that line?
I went to art school in London, and I've stayed in London ever since. I went to art school back in the early 70s. And I stayed in London ever since. And I don't really know how I got into architecture, really, because I wasn't sure what it was when I first did, but I've always been in architects' offices. In 1989, I started up my own business, and I've been doing that since 1989.
And what kind of things do you work on?
Well, at the moment, we're working on two hotels, one GP centre, one private house, and just starting a kind of an art centre project up in Tottenham.
Do you enjoy your work?
I do, yeah. That's why I carry on doing it. Yeah, ultimately I do. It's frustrating sometimes, but it's good to work for yourself and to manage to get by.
And how do you manage to balance getting out and performing and playing the saxophone?
Well, lots of people ask me that, and lots of people told me that when I started my own business, that put paid and playing the saxophone, because people said I wouldn't have time to do both, but I do. So, and one of the benefits of working for yourself is that you can choose. And one of the good things about a recession, of course, is that you start running out of work, so you play more saxophone.
And what do you get from playing the saxophone? What do you enjoy about it?
Oh, I can't answer those sort of questions. I don't know, I just do it. I've always done it, and so I do it. That's like asking Anthony Gormley why he does art, isn't it?
Do you see this hour as a performance, or is it just a... what are you looking at it for this hour? Is it, are you doing it for yourself or for the people watching?
No, I'm not really doing it for people watching, but I wouldn't say I'm doing it for myself either, really. I mean, it's a part of an ongoing thing. One of the things about improvised music and jazz is the spontaneity, the spontaneous side of it. And I quite like the idea that you weren't sure whether you're ever going to do it or not. So if it happens, it happens. If it didn't, I wouldn't have been very disappointed if it didn't happen, to be honest. I mean, it would have just flown me by and I'd have been doing something else. Like I'm doing tonight, I'm playing a fairly odd gig tonight. There's a guy showing a film for an hour and he's picked five musicians who never met before. Well, that's not strictly speaking true, two of us have. And we're going to improvise the soundtrack to the film live. That's the sort of thing that appeals to me, that kind of spontaneous get up and do it approach, really.
Where do you even begin with something like that? How do you know?
Well, everybody asks that as well, don't they? It's like saying, well, that's you do it, basically. And you can either, I mean, really, I suppose, when you think about it, if you think about it too hard, there's two kinds of people that do it, really. There's people that sometimes people believe that jazz musicians and people who play improvised music are actually trying to mystify it, but they're not really, because often you get asked these sort of questions, and how do you play together when you've not rehearsed and all that sort of thing. But I mean, you and I are having a conversation now, we've never met before, and there's certain conventions that you're smiling and keeping quiet and I'm talking, and then I smile and keep quiet and you ask me a question. I mean, improvised music in jazz is not very different than that, except that you just use a different language, like saxophones or guitars or other instruments. So it's like that, really. And then there's another group of people who actually do kind of, in a sense, worry into it and intellectualize it and think about it quite carefully and are quite prescriptive in what they do, work it all out, if you like. And then there are some people that take it in a more frivolous, now frivolous is the wrong word, but they take it in a more spontaneous, I can't think of a better word really, spontaneity.
Did you teach yourself to play, or did you learn from someone else?
No, I played when I was at school, not a saxophone. I played the violin for a little while and the recorder like everybody else and banged around on the piano at home. And then when I went and studied in London and had to do work afterwards, because I had to work to live, and work was fairly tedious when you first leave college, so I wanted to do something else, so I went back to music. So I did it formally, really. I took one-to-one lessons for a couple of years, thought I'd done it, that's it, sorted, answered a few adverts for bands, realised there was a lot more to it than just doing it for 2 years, and went back to lessons again. And then I actually took, I think I took lessons for nearly 11 years with one guy, in fact, until he died. And then I've just always played ever since then, really.
Do you have any expectations about what the hour on the plinth will be like?
No, not really thought about it very much, really. The only thing I thought about was I put my hat on, and I put a sort of jazzy looking shirt on, and that's all, really. I didn't know about it until today, until 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock this evening.
What happened when you heard that you had a place?
I just rang up and I said yes, and I went home and went to bed for a little while, and got up and had a shower and came here.
Were you happy to be called?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
So will you be playing non-stop for the hour?
Well, I'd like to think I might do that, yeah. But if I bore myself after a little while, I might stop, have a think. But yeah, the idea is that I shall try not to acknowledge anybody. And I did sit down there for a little while beforehand and give it a little bit of thought. And so I will be looking towards towards Nelson's Column, towards the high side, and I shan't be acknowledging anybody. I shall just stand and play the saxophone for 1 hour, if I can manage that, which I should be able to, really. And that's it, really. And hope the hat stays on my head.
Do Do you have any hopes or fears about what the hour will be like?
Nope.
And have you got anyone with you tonight?
My other half might try. She has got the alarm put on for 4:30, so she might try and get up for the last 15 minutes. That's all. Nobody else knows about it.
No one watching online at all?
No. Well, nobody else knows. I mean, I was asked 7 o'clock tonight. I haven't told anybody.
Have you deliberately not told anybody?
No, just didn't think about it. Just came along to do it, and that's it.
And when you get off the plinth, what is it that you hope to have got out of the experience?
Well, I doubt whether afterwards that I'll have got anything out of it. It'll be in like a week's time when you think, oh, that was quite a funny thing to do. That was quite odd. And then I guess you'll see bits of it talked about. And then I'll probably formulate some thoughts about it. I already have a little bit. You know, I do think the paraphernalia with it is a bit disappointing, to be honest. That's what I was talking about when somebody said, well, why don't you give it a go? Because I came up here and spent Monday afternoon last week up here having a look just for fun. And I thought, good idea, but the paraphernalia has really got in the way of the idea, isn't it? You know, the nets and the... And I don't think, and even this, I mean, builders' huts in the middle of Trafalgar Square, not the nicest thing to have done, was it, really?
And what is it that... Do you want to go ahead and do it then?
Well, even though I had... Well, that's only my personal judgment of it, isn't it? I mean, it's quite a sort of brave thing to try and do. All of the plinth things have been fairly brave things to try and do, haven't they? And they've always been problematic. I suppose probably the simpler ones have been the least problematic, but Rachel Whitereed had a hell of a time getting her thing here, didn't she? You know, I mean, people... Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea. And, you know, it is fascinating to see somebody like Anthony Gormley tackle a problem like this. And then I imagine he found some of it quite frustrating, you know, some of the paraphernalia that's had to be incorporated. And then I imagine he's... I don't know this, but I'm judging by some of the questions I've been asked, you know, disabled or not and all that sort of thing. I imagine he's come up against all that sort of... health and safety issues and gender issues and political issues and which is kind of interesting. So all that adds up to something interesting, doesn't it? That's why I'm speaking now, isn't it? Because somebody thinks it's worthwhile gathering all these interviews together and listening to them, which is not a bad idea.
And other than coming on that Monday afternoon, have you watched any of it online?
No. A little bit. But not very much, no. No.
Do you think the project's a good way of getting an idea of the people of Britain today or not?
Do you know, I don't know really. I mean, there's no way of knowing, is there? I mean, I don't suppose anybody knows yet, do they? But when it's all analysed afterwards, I guess it'll be good. I mean, it's kind of, I was just sitting there thinking just now, it's kind of interesting the people who will... There's a predisposition for some people to want to do it, isn't there, probably? And I did wonder, am I one of one... How many people is it altogether? I wondered if I was one of 2,400 nutters, basically, you know. And it was quite interesting looking at the visitors' book, because some people have come from a long way. I mean, there's somebody from Enniskillen in there. There's somewhere from one of the Scottish islands in there. So, you know, that's a fairly big commitment, isn't it? I presume they've come specifically all the way from Enniskillen to here to do it and go back again. Yeah. Mind you, I guess if you come to Enniskillen doing something like that, it might be the biggest thing in your life, mightn't it?
And other than your saxophone playing, have you participated in arts projects?
I have, yep. I've been responsible for some of them as well. My office, when I set up my business in 1989, it was my office was in Charlotte Road in Shoreditch, and so I was surrounded by the Brit art thing, really, just by default, really. So, I mean, for instance, my office is at 44A Charlotte Road, and 44A Charlotte Royal was Factual Nonsense, which is Joshua Compton's gallery. And he introduced people like Damien Hirst and Tracy Emin, and they all lived in the street, really, and Gavin Turk. So I was involved in the early days of the Fate Worse Death and the Hanging Picnic and No Fun Without You. And it goes on to today with the Foundry and that sort of Shoreditch thing. So I've always been involved in that on the sort of musical side, really, or the performance side is probably a better way of putting it.
And do you enjoy the arts world?
I do. You're determined to find something I enjoy, aren't you? I trundle along. I have a theory, but it would take too long to go through it, but which I call my tractor theory. I'm basically a tractor, in essence. I'm not very different to one of those JCB things, really.
Are you able to summarise your theory?
Well, it's, yeah, sort of. It's about not getting too worked up about anything, really. And not being too backward in doing things you want to do, but not getting too... Well, the people, and I stopped myself from saying a word there, didn't I? Because I get fed up with people saying they're stressed, and you get fed up with people going through all these little phrases that don't really mean anything. You know, why would anybody be stressed? You know, there's nothing to be stressed about, really, is there? You know.
Do you not get stressed about
it? I try not to. I mean, if I did, I mean, you know, sometimes I'm in a bar playing a saxophone with some people that are probably, you know, not all there, really, probably, sometimes. And then the next day I can be on a building site responsible for a £24 million hotel project. So it would be very easy just to drive myself completely bonkers, wouldn't it? So that's why I call it the tractor theory. And the reason I call it a tractor theory is I come from the countryside, and quite often when you go in the countryside, you can see an old busted up tractor lying in the side of the road, but you'll guarantee that it will start up and do something. Even if it's been there 20 years, it'll work. And if you build yourself up into being some kind of sports car, and you see a sports car that's 20 years old by the road, it will not work. So it's about being steady. Steady Eddie. That's me.
What does this... Are you able to say what this opportunity means to you?
No. Well, I suppose, I mean, if I'm being honest, I suppose one of the reasons I quite like the thought of doing it is, I mean, I actually played once in Hoxton Square for a Tim Noble. Tim Noble had put a, as part of an arts fete, if you like, he'd put a bird box in a tree with a bird sound in it. And I stood below the tree and played the saxophone with the bird box in the tree. Now, I mean, that was a fun day, and it was meant to be fun. You know, the whole thing was called Fun. No Fun Without You, and all that sort of thing. And I guess one of the reasons why I'm doing today is if I look back at all the odd things I've done with the saxophone. I mean, I play a lot with a guy called Lol Coxo. Now, he actually done something even I haven't done, but he actually played it underwater once, you know, in a swimming pool in Denmark, played the saxophone under the water. And there is a sort of, it's a continual thing. It's another box to tick, if you like, or another thing to add to the list, really, of all the odd things that I've been able to do just because I played a saxophone, if you like. Or because I live in London, or because I've met somebody. All of these things that I'm talking about, I've never done deliberately. I got in office, a guy called Joshua Compton. Do you know Joshua Compton? Well, Joshua Compton moves in underneath. He committed suicide when he was 26 in the same place, or probably committed suicide, died from a Halon overdose. And then I went to his funeral, and Gilbert and George were at the funeral. Gavin Turk was across the way, he became a friend of mine. You know, things happen, and I quite like the way all those things happen. And if they are happening to you, you can do one of two things. You can either sort of join in, you know, without making it too big an issue of it, or you can do what some people do and think, oh, they're just bunch of nutcases. I'm not having anything to do with that. You know, I'm just going to, and that, I don't do that. I just run along with it a little bit. Be a tractor, you see. Chug along with it.
Is this the most unusual place you've played or not?
Probably not, really. I went on an arts event, really. 57 people went on with a DTI grant. We did an exchange with a community arts centre in Moscow, and we went over and ran the place for a week, really. And I organised the music side of that. And so we were playing every night in a sort of community arts centre right in the middle of what you might call a sort of dodgy estate in Moscow. That was fairly interesting. You know, I've played festivals in France, more conventional sort of festivals. Do you know the Clinker Club? You probably don't, do you? No, but the Clinker Club is really an institution, a London institution for the time I call it loony left field performance and live music, but. And it is a little bit like that, but it's a bit glib way of putting it. But I mean, I've played with some very strange people at all sort of places.
What are the things that are important to you in your life at the moment?
Where did you get these questions from? You're managing to ask them without even blushing. I don't know, really. I think I'm quite good at adjusting to what happens to me. I mean, that's a good thing about doing this kind of spontaneous or playing improvised music and or doing two things, even. Working in the daytime, it's something which is a fairly sort of business-like thing to have to do. And then in the evenings, some of the time, doing something which is more... well, less business-like in some ways. Although I do get frustrated sometimes by the fact that some of the things that you do outside of work should be more business-like, really. I mean, like people getting there on time, or you wouldn't believe the number of guitarists that turn up without a lead, you know, that sort of thing. And you think, well, you're actually a guitar player, you know, an electric guitar player, and you turn up without a lead. Well, that's pretty bright, isn't it? You know, so you get that kind of thing, which can be frustrating sometimes. But, you know, tractors don't get too bothered by that sort of thing. They just carry on, you know, doing their best.
How would you describe yourself as a person?
That's a pretty tough one. Well, that comes down a little bit, again, to the tractor philosophy, isn't it? Because one of the things you shouldn't do too much is overanalyze yourself. Because probably... it's like that idea of knowing what you look like, isn't it, really? I mean, you can look in a mirror, but you can never quite know how somebody else thinks you look. And probably it's the same with your personality, really, or your person, is that, you know, whatever I think it is, probably it isn't. I don't know, but I guess probably it isn't. But I'm a fairly reasonable, easygoing sort of person, really. I was only averagely bright at school. I went to art school, wanted to be a painter, never made it. Fell into architecture. I take that quite seriously, but I know my limitations in that. In a funny kind of way, I'm probably better known as a saxophone player than I am as an architect or a designer. Technically, I'm not an architect. Technically, I'm a designer. That's all sorts of legal reasons, but... but, yeah, I'm just a nice chap, really. Well, what are you doing tomorrow?
I know you haven't known for very long that you're doing this. How would you summarise your experience of the project since hearing that you had a place to this moment before going up?
Are you asking me technically about bits and pieces here or emotionally?
Emotionally, what's it been like?
Well, One of the things that I don't get nervous about performance, I never have really, and it's probably not a good thing anyway, because I'm told by people who get nervous that the buzz is kind of more intense, maybe, if you're a bit nervous about it. But that's one of the downsides of being a tractor, isn't it? You know, is that you can only chug, you can't go fast. So you have to accept the fact that if you're going to get the benefits of being fairly level-headed and fairly steady, then you've got to accept the fact that you don't necessarily get the big buzz to go with it. So that's maybe a little tinsy downside to being sensible.
Would you have done anything other
than
play the saxophone up there?
Yeah, I would have been quite happy just... If I thought I could do it, I mean, I don't know if anybody's done it. Has anybody stood up there and tried to actually not move for an hour? I mean, that would be quite a challenge, wouldn't it? Believe it or not, I've been doing yoga for quite a long time. As I got older and I got slightly worried about tying my own shoelaces up and that kind of thing. And I've always been slightly robustly built. I drink too much beer, which again, being a tractor doesn't actually bother me. I mean, it's not something I allow to bother me, really. I've weighed just short of 17 stone for the last 15 years or maybe even 20 years probably, and I stay consistent, and I think that's much more important than worrying about it. In fact, it's probably healthy, and the worst thing you can do really is move up and down all the time. But I did start getting worried about being stiff, so I have been doing yoga for a long time, and it would be a challenge to sort of do a shoulder stand for an hour, wouldn't it? I mean, it's just an obvious thing. If I didn't play the saxophone, I probably wouldn't do it. I mean, probably would have not even thought to do it then, would I, really? I mean, the only thing that made me think about it was, cool, that would be a pretty interesting thing to do. You know, it's quite loud. I mean, I am quite loud. And, you know, maybe even Gordon Brown will hear it. Might do, mightn't he? I might wake him up.
Why did you pick that over everything else then?
What's that?
Why did you pick to play the saxophone over?
Well, originally.
Yeah, or for tonight, why did you pick that over doing an hour?
Because that's what I do, really. I'm a saxophone player, and the reason I play the saxophone is I just think they're... I mean, the reason I started to play the saxophone is I just think they're amazing things physically. I mean, they're a little work of art in their own right, aren't they, saxophones? I mean, they're just amazing little pieces of engineering, you know. Fantastic thing. In fact, you could wax lyrical about the design of things like saxophones, can you? Because they do look fantastic, and yet, ultimately, they've been made out of necessity, haven't they? They haven't been stylized or designed from a stylistic point of view. They've been made to work. That's like Norman Foster in his aeroplane, you know. Aeroplanes, you can't be willful designing an aeroplane because it won't fly. You have to design it to fly. And that's quite interesting. And a saxophone's a bit like, although they do put patterns on them and things, but they are, it is essentially a machine for, and it was designed to be played out of doors. I mean, that's what they were designed for, and that's why they were quite loud. Originally, saxophones were designed to play what people call classical music out of doors, originally. So trying to make flutes sound loud, so you turn it into a saxophone. So it's a natural thing to play outdoors. I only just thought of that. That was quite good, wasn't it? Yeah. I wonder if the Wellcome Trust will be impressed by that.
Sure they will. Thank you.
Okay.